Group meeting, Saturday, 11th February, 1984. We have been trying during the autumn and last month to free ourselves, if possible, from all kinds of misconceptions and what I at least consider false teachings. You remember we have considered, for instance, the ideas prevalent about karma. As St. Paul put it, whatsoever you sow, you will reap. It's quite impossible. What is it that I sow? Am I the exclusive agent of what I think, feel, speak, or do? Or have there been so many other influences at play which make me think and feel and speak and do what I do? So that, obviously, the resultant of what I do or think cannot come only to me, if it does at all. Again, a person who performs an act which is the last in a chain of acts and a chain of causes which have led up to that act does not reap the result for himself alone. A man drops an atomic bomb, and in modern times, if he does it, the slain will be not merely 100,000 at a time, but will run into 3 or 4 millions at a time. Now, I perform the act, as people ordinarily say. Who reaps the result of that act? You see, all these ideas which are associated with reward punishment are false ideas. The entire universal process is a process which is concerned with making whole, restoring to wholeness that which got separated out in the course of involution of the original creative energy and subsequent evolution through consciousness. So you see, we have to have a very open mind about these things. Put aside the ideas and convictions and fixed beliefs, which are always a hindrance to progress, fixed beliefs, always a hindrance to progress. Put them aside and continuously learn all the time. Take, for instance, this other idea that the individual who is a psychophysical organism has a soul, and it is called an immortal soul. Now, if that immortal soul, if it is an immortal soul, then it must necessarily belong to the context of the transcendent, the infinite, the eternal, the immortal. Now, the teaching goes, and it is in most of the religions, in some form or other. The theistic religions have one type of expression, and Hinduism and Buddhism have a different type. The teaching goes like this: whatsoever is done by the living organism in the world, when after it is dead, the soul is awarded an eternal heaven or an eternal hell for what it has done. Now, how many of us are even, I mean, when I say us, I should exclude us on the whole, but how many people out of the 4,000 millions in the world are even aware that they have a soul, if they have it, that is? How many are aware? How many are conscious in that way? Conscious. They may hold the idea, oh, you know, the immortal part of me, the permanent part of me is a soul, and it is divine and all the rest of the claptrap. You see? All right, how many people are aware? If they are unaware, how then can they function as if they were souls utilizing a body? They can't. That's the whole point. And consider this. The organism performs certain finite, limited actions throughout a period of 50, 60, 70, 100 years, if you like, you see. Now, how can any of those actions, which are finite and limited, produce a consequence which is infinite, eternal, unlimited? It's totally impossible, in fact. So those old religious teachings which have plagued mankind for millennia are teachings which must now be pensioned off. There is no getting away from that fact. As we grow, as we become increasingly conscious of the real nature of things, all those old fixed beliefs must go, definitely go. And with the going of the fixed beliefs will also go the false kind of faith which we have with regard to the omniscience of the teacher or whoever it is. These are all bondages. Think carefully of the terrible effect upon people who are more or less compelled to believe in an eternal hell if they live a bad life. Think of the terrible effect. I remember in my own case as a child, because I was very concerned about all these things from my very, very young childhood, 5 and 6 years of age. And I used to ask questions all the time. And of course, my poor dear sainted mother didn't know the answers. So she just gave me the conventional answer. You'll be a good boy, you'll go to heaven and you'll be very, very happy. You'll be a bad boy and you'll go to hell and you'll know eternal torment forever and ever. Now, you know, that sort of thing has a horrible effect upon an individual. It really has a horrible effect. A child, after a time, forgets these things and pushes them aside, goes and plays and is happy and laughing and jumping. But deep in the subconscious, there is a cancer, a real cancer at work. And there can be no sort of possibility of for that person to come to fruition in his lifetime if that cancer is somehow not eradicated. I know it took me decades literally, to be free of all these absurdities. Then again, the very idea that a soul is attached to a living body and a soul is immortal is again impossible. Because if it belongs to the context of infinity, eternity, immortality, then it is not a finite thing. A soul is something finite, attached to this particular person, his soul, her soul, and so forth. And no such thing. Soul, if you like, or spirit, or whatever you like to say, if it belongs to the context of the infinite and the eternal, the context of transcendence, of divinity, of God, use whatever word you like, then that is not a particular something which is your soul or your spirit, or my soul or my spirit. It is the one total spirit, one absolute spirit, just as there is the one whole consciousness which permeates the entire cosmos, including, of course, us human beings. And you see, I present it, of course, in what seem to me to be logical terms. But my presentation is, therefore, an idea logically presented. Logical presentation can produce a belief, an intellectual acceptance, if you like. But that is not good enough. Because any intellectual acceptance can be challenged, and you can always be in a state of inner anxiety. Is this true or is it not true? Am I making a mistake? If I listen to Firoz and believe this, perhaps I might end up in hell. You see, the fact of that anxiety is just a proof that the person really doesn't know about it. One has to be completely conscious of the truth of what we hold. You see, when the individual is the true yogi, or the truly enlightened person, then he is actually conscious of that of which formerly he just had an idea. When human beings become conscious, actually conscious, and consciously function in terms of infinity, eternity, immortality, you will find that all these things which we have raised up, our theological systems and philosophical systems and so forth, they are all negated, but not destroyed. They are negated for the simple reason that when consciousness is in that transcendent state of functioning, it is free of all the limitations that the finite and temporal consciousness suffers from. My consciousness here and now as an ordinary man is limited to the finite and the temporal, and therefore the mortal. You see, the prince of this world is death. Death is the ruler of the finite and temporal. But as and when that limited consciousness becomes free of those limitations and functions in terms of infinity and eternity, then all that completely disappears. All the anxieties, the problems, the fixed ideas and so forth, they all vanish altogether. But the world as the world is the same world. Here, as we sit and talk and listen, we are aware of each person here as a particular separate person, which in terms of our consciousness functioning in the manner of the finite and the temporal is perfectly true. John Smith is John Smith, and Billy Brown is Billy Brown. There's no getting away from that. That's how we are conscious. But as and when that consciousness in terms of the finite is transmuted into consciousness in terms of the infinite, I am Billy Brown and John Smith and everything else in the universe. You know, those perfected holy ones and those great mystics and teachers who realized this transcendent state of consciousness unequivocally and fearlessly affirmed this truth. I am the totality. It is better, I think, to put it the other way around. The totality, transcendence, God, the ultimate, is me. The Vedantic statement in the Upanishads, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. It would have been much better to have put it the other way around and said, Brahman is me. And Brahman is defined as the absolute all, the totality. Now you see, what are we evolving towards? What is the human race evolving towards? You know, the pongids and the hominids sort of branched off something like 65 million years ago. And somewhere about 25 million years ago, the hominids definitely began to come into being. So we, as two-legged, tailless creatures, are actually, each one of us is actually about 25 million years old. Because the emergence of the next person and the next person by being born out of its mother has been going on, and that sort of condition, that human condition, has perpetually moved through the thousands of millions of people who have been born and died. Isn't that so? So, in a sense, we are, each one of us, is the entire human race from the beginning of time. Of course, we haven't got birth certificates to suggest that we are 25 million years old. But still, one can see that this sort of thing is the case. Now, what has evolved in this process? We have observed an evolution in terms of shape and form, of capacity, of knowledge, and so forth and so forth, you see. But we have forgotten to observe that there is this extraordinary reality, this transcendent reality of the evolution of consciousness itself. This is what is evolving. Now, I would say that the entire universe, all nature, has a sense of transcendence in it, simply because the entire cosmos has emerged out of the primordial, undifferentiated, creative activity, energy. Out of that energy has evolved, which held everything that has emerged in potentiality at the start. The origin was like that. And that came out in terms of consciousness and in terms of substance, matter. Substance ultimately became matter as you and I experience it, solid, liquid, gaseous, and so on. It wasn't like that before. Mystics and people with profound, remarkable powers to enter deep states of consciousness have contacted these states, they have named them with the names of archangels and angels and so forth. I have tended to call them not creatures, but archetypal expressions of awareness being. But it is being which is minus matter. As the involution, the going down process, so to say, continues, it finally ends up in matter, pure matter as such, which is in which consciousness is completely imprisoned. It doesn't know itself. Take a stone. Does a stone know itself? Does a metal know itself? It doesn't. And then, out of that condition, as the evolutionary process went on, came the vegetable kingdom, and then the animal kingdom, and we are supposed to be the peak point of the animal kingdom, although the behavior of human beings doesn't always suggest that we are the peak point of the animal kingdom. The animals can teach us a great deal of simple decency, which we haven't got yet. However, what has evolved then through all that process is consciousness, this awareness. Look at the way in which a pet animal is aware of the one who has that pet. There is a curious link, a knowing of each other, a state of psychical sympathy, if you like. And look how, for instance, a dog or a horse will be so very faithful and careful about his or her owner as such. See, there is this link. But apart from knowing his master, does a dog have awareness of the whole environment, the people in the village, all the people in the village, or the town, or the city? Doesn't. Has that dog awareness and sensitivities which we human beings have in so many respects? He hasn't, you see, because his consciousness is at that level only. In human beings, consciousness is at the level at which it is at present, and it is evolving towards this consciousness which will ultimately make us be fully cognizant of the fact of the unitary wholeness, that means the holiness of the one total reality, the absolute all. That is something which is the crown of evolution for man. And each one of us who works towards that, really works towards that, through understanding oneself, through the purification of the psyche and the body, you see, is a person who is working towards the fulfillment of the purpose of his particular existence. This is just one aspect of the whole situation. There is a lot more, but let us deal with one big thing at a time. This is an immensely big thing. Do remember, it is not a case of holding an idea or a series of ideas which I have put forward at the moment. It is the ideas as such are a starting point. They are a stimulus. But don't cling to the idea, because the idea is a verbal conceptual shape, a form. All shapes, all forms change, you see. And because each and every single person is absolutely unique, there is something in that person which is precisely that person. And it is different from everybody else. That doesn't mean that any one person is altogether different from everybody else. Not at all. We are all flesh, blood, bone, skin, and so forth. we are all silly, we are all clever, we are all these things and so forth, you see. There is the unity of so many in terms of so many qualities, but there is also uniqueness in terms of the specific individual as such, which is deep in your own self-consciousness, in the innermost region of self-consciousness. So now, each person has to find out his particular way. You see, a way which is laid down for you is something which encloses you, doesn't free you. It can help you, provided you approach it with the real open-minded experimental attitude. Jesus said this, the Buddha said that, Zarathustra said this, Sri Krishna taught that. All right, let's see, let's find out for ourselves. And each person finds out absolutely in his own way for himself. You know how people, particularly in the modern world, and particularly, I'm afraid, in the American, European world, they will all sort of think and argue in these terms. Don't I matter? What lies at the back of that? There is this sort of faint subconscious realization that I am unique. But the real answer to that question, don't I matter, is simply this. Of course you don't matter. You don't matter. Scrap. If you really did matter in the sense that you want it to matter, that you imagine it matters, you will never die. You could be immortal. Now you see, these are very deep things. These are very difficult things. Very difficult indeed. But then, that's the whole story. Everything, wherever there is the manifestation of creativeness, there is always tremendous difficulty. Think simply in terms of biological creativeness. Giving birth to a child is a difficult job. Very few women can give birth to the child quite easily. Very, very few indeed. I happen to know of one lady, someone whom I knew way back in the 1920s. No, I beg your pardon, 1930s. And she bore 3 children, and each time the birth was perfectly easy, and so forth. But those are exceptions. Creating something, giving birth to something, whether it be biological or whether it be cultural, is attended with very great difficulty. So we mustn't shirk that business because it is difficult. Anything good is going to be difficult. So now, back we come to this business of the evolution of our own consciousness. You will discover it, you will see it in your own unique way. Utilize whatsoever others tell you, whatsoever you may find out from a book or a lecture or whatever it is. Utilize it, experiment with it. Don't swallow it lock, stock and barrel. Don't reject it out of hand. Keep considering it. Keep observing it. And in this observation process, there is the livingness of the spiritual, creative side of our life. There is a livingness involved in it. And as one lives that way, one finds that so many unnecessary worries, anxieties, sorrows, troubles, they all disappear. They just become non-existent. In practically all cases, our anxieties and worries emerge out of the self-oriented self-consciousness. Of course, one has to be self-conscious. To live in a physical, in a material world, one has to be self-conscious. Otherwise, it wouldn't be very long before one perishes. But one has to be self-conscious in the right way. What is the essential element of the right way? In being self-conscious, see to it that one is inclusive of right relationship with whoever is nearby, whoever is one's neighbor. Love thy neighbor as thyself. But there is no such thing as loving your neighbor unless you are fully awake to your neighbor, conscious of your neighbor. If you can't be really conscious of him, you'll merely react psychologically for or against him. But that's no use. In being really conscious of a neighbor, your wife or your husband, your child, your friend or whoever it is, in being really conscious, there is just complete right relationship all the time. So, in terms of that right relationship, one learns all the time. One learns both what one's neighbor is like in actuality and what one's self is like. Haven't we observed in life to what an extraordinary extent we live by, oh, I don't like this, oh, I like that, and so forth, you see? Now, this is just an animal reaction. It is not human. It is subhuman, very, very definitely subhuman. There are situations, there are occasions when the liking or not liking goes beyond a mere animal reaction. There is a real linking, linking either through attraction or aversion. One way or the other. Observe that very carefully. Observe it. And if one observes, like a scientist, impartially, dispassionately, one finds that relationship, which is wrong both ways, in mere animal liking or animal disliking, is transformed into a right human relationship. It's very difficult. I do know that. But there we are. So now, there is something which is very, very important as regards freeing ourselves from bondages. It is extremely difficult to be free of the idea that there is something in me that goes on and on and on after death and so forth. You may invent a theory of rebirth constantly. Perpetual rebirth, life after life. Now what happens with the rebirth, life after life? There comes a stage which is considered to be enlightenment, you see, and liberation. The Hindu will call it moksha. The Buddhist will have his own terminology and so forth. And all that is for you. That is the end for you, as they say. What is the meaning of you? What is the meaning of I? It is our particular verbal, conceptual mode of representing this particular living organism, which is me. Supposing that I were to be reborn again and again through the ages, how will I know that I am reborn? That what I call I at present is this finite, perishable thing. It's a concept. It's an idea. And with the death of the organism, all ideas disappear. Those ideas are stored up in the brain and they affect us that way. But that completely disappears. Then who is enlightened? Not me. When I say I or me, it means specifically this thing whilst it is alive. There is no other I or me when this is not alive. Even in sleep it disappears. How much more so when all the constituents that contribute to the concept of the self are dead, how much more so this me, this I, completely vanishes. Completely vanishes. Vanishes to the extent of being annihilated. But you may say, then that is a doctrine of it's a horrible doctrine of absolute annihilation. What is the purpose of trying to do anything or be decent or good and so forth? The purpose is just this. Whatsoever is done by each living organism, each living past person, affects the totality. And the totality affects us in response, and the whole process is the whole process of each individual is a holographic process. It holds in itself the totality, like a hologram will represent the entire thing, the big thing. See, now this is what we are not conscious of. I'm not conscious of it in the real sense, but I have been able to sort of appreciate what it stands for. The particular individual is a microcosm, a little cosmos, a little transcendence, a little totality. That's what the individual is. A microcosm. Brood upon that fact. Meditate on it. And see what happens in your own inner consciousness. You will find yourself getting a very much more sensitive and powerful touch with the totality as such. Then infinity and eternity and immortality and such things will not be words. They'll be facts in your consciousness, in your inner consciousness. those facts and that consciousness will negate all the petty little things and the petty little ideas and so forth which the human race has held for a very, very long time. So this way, the individual not only fulfills the purpose of his existence, but by his own existence during his lifetime, he is helping forward the growth and advancement, the well-being, the happiness of all humanity, of all the world around him. That is how it happens. But this is the most powerful influence. That of which you are truly conscious is the most powerful factor for betterment. All the other things, the society for the promotion of this and the suppression of that and all the rest of it, they stir the pot, all right, you see. But they're just stirring the pot. But this inner consciousness and its development and fulfillment is the thing which will make the individual a benediction to the world in which he lives. And that, of course, really means living religiously in the supreme sense. The external religions of the world and the organized religions of the world, according to which so many thousands of people live, they pray, they make sacrifices, they do this, they do the other, and so forth, which is all of which is laid down in their religious teachings. All that is a music hall show, a tamasha. That's all it is, really. It is effective up to a point. Anything is effective up to a point. When a pin drops, if your hearing is very good, you hear it. Unless it drops onto the carpet. You see? So every little thing is effective. That is why the Buddha said that you must be extremely watchful of every little thing. So now, if we are concerned in the real sense with living the religious life, which means nothing else, nothing other than living the human life, the secular life, in a religious way, in an intelligent, creative, constructive way. That's what religion means, and religious living. Then it's all right. Carry on. Don't bother, don't worry if you make a mistake. Don't be upset at all these horrible things I say, that there is nothing for the individual whatsoever. Heaven and hell are here and now. I am the maker of heaven and hell. I, the limited I, but I, the total I, the one reality which is the I, functioning through me and through every other human being in the world, is the I which has banished heaven and hell forever. So don't worry about all that. Just be happy. But be happy, not chasing pleasure.